Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Match Ball.
The show is brought to you by Levi Solicitors, where you can get 10% off your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. I'm Dan Moylan. Hello. With me, Michael Normanton.
Hello.
Moscow White. Daniel Chapman as well.
Hello.
30 years ago to the day, this is what the Match Ball 30 is all about. We look back at the games that happened exactly 30 years ago, and cup fever is still just about hanging in the air over Elland Road. We did go out of the FA Cup after a titanic struggle against Arsenal. That happened last week.
Did anyone care in the end? Just glad to get it over
with? Just get it finished with, yeah. I think there was a bit of that in the air, actually, by the time it came round to that final game, and there was a sense of, oh, well, at least it's done now.
Wilco did say that he was happier going out after four matches with Arsenal than if we'd gone straight out to Barnsley. So he was happy, at least. And I think Bill Fotherby will probably have been happy as well at the money that came in for all those games being on the telly and sponsorship opportunities and ticket sales and programme sales, but it did kind of mean nobody wanted to go and watch us in the ZDS Cup.
Yeah, so we had Arsenal on the 16th of Feb, and then we had the Northern Area semi-final against Manchester City. Nearly 12,000 in attendance at that, an absolute bumper crowd. That was just 4 days ago on the 20th of Feb, where we beat Man City 2-0 with two goals right at the very end of extra time, and something we didn't need because of the fixture pile-up was extra time in an absolutely two-bit competition.
Well, it is a route to Wembley, but so is the Rumbelows Cup, and we're closer in the Rumbelows Cup.
That defeat at Old Trafford smarted a little bit, but it's very much within grasp is this one.
Do you mean next year?
Probably. I was just trying to create some tension around it, but obviously we know what happened.
Annoying. Both of these games were annoying, weren't they?
It felt like
we never got going.
You say next year. Howard Wilkinson has promised that we will get to Wembley twice next year on the back of this game. I don't know if he's drunk after the match, but that's what he says.
Two-legged ZDS final or something like that. Oh, God. Let's rewind to before the game and set this one up and paint a picture of what it was like. 32,000 inside Elland Road to witness us lose 1-0 ultimately in the end, and an absolute bear pit of an atmosphere. And that sort of undercurrent from the first match where we were kicking the shit out of each other carried over into this, and there was a sort of air of it on the terraces too.
I think that's what makes it so annoying to lose, because you really get a sense of it mattering from the crowd and from the players as well. They were absolutely flying into each other. And then bloody Lee Sharp goes and scores, and it just completely ruins what would be a fun and angsty day if you can grab a win out of this.
To some people, it was kind of the making of the day, because it was the reason or the excuse for a proper fight. If it had finished 0-0 and it was kind of just the scoreline from the first leg, you'd kind of maybe be tempted to just go home. But Lee Sharp scoring from what looked at first like a clearly offside position in the 6th minute of stoppage time, moments after Gary Speed had almost secured extra time for us, is what sparked a big scrap.
Yeah, I mean, people who were there will tell you, and I remember being there as a kid, there were plenty of people older than me who will tell you just how toxic the atmosphere was on this night. It's one of the most toxic atmospheres I can remember being part of at Elland Road, you know. I mean, the Galatasaray game was really, really heavy and toxic, but for entirely different reasons. But this was nasty.
And it was the Mancunians' fault. Say that straight away. I mean, there is going to be an FA investigation, a probe, as the headlines always call them. But the headline, the main one that catches the eye in the Yorkshire Evening Post after the game, is that men in suits swap punches. There was a fight in the captain's lounge, which is the real worrying thing, because people are used to football hooligans, louts with bowl cuts and baggy T-shirts, trading punches in the streets. But when it's men in suits in the captain's lounge, it just goes to show that a tie is no guarantee of good behaviour. I mean, we're skipping straight to the end, but it was kind of the story afterwards. Because, as we mentioned in the first game, there was the big argument about ticket allocations and that Leeds, on police advice, could only give 2,600 to Man United. So they cut off their nose to spite their face and only gave us 2,600 at Old Trafford. Leeds, being friendly people and nice, offered a kind of rapprochement where they said that you can sell tickets in the executive areas and that'll be fine, the captain's lounge included. And those tickets made their way into backstreet pubs where they were on sale to anybody in Manchester who wanted them. And that's one of the reasons why there was such violence in the captain's lounge and the normally well-to-do West Stand. You've got to remember, the Low Field doesn't have any executive facilities. There's some boxes in the South Stand, but the West Stand is where most of the posh seats are. I think the other contributing factor was that a lot of the people who owned executive boxes or executive seats in the West Stand, who from the Leeds side at this point, were people who in the back end of the 80s had done quite well for themselves, but in the earlier part of the 80s had been fighting on terraces perhaps and had maybe seen the other side of life. And face to face with their counterparts from Manchester, the fact that they were in the executive areas and that there were women and children around and tea trolleys and suits and ties went out the window, swiftly followed by a couple of chairs and maybe some people from Manchester if they could manage it as
Hello, old friend. But no, it's very true. It's not like it's massive corporate arrangements like these days. Massive firm of accountants, maybe Sky TV if something have got a box. No. This was local businesses, wasn't it? And they hated each other.
Yeah, and they were very up for defending the West Stand against any attempts to take the chairman's suite or whatever was going on. It was just running battles. I have heard talk of people in positions of responsibility who were dragged into Howard Wilkinson's office over the way that they had been behaving in the executive seats and told to cut it out in future. But it was all Manchester United's fault.
I'm sure Bill Fotherby allowed him to clear it up with a few purchases.
Well, let's go back to the start of the game then and sort of lead us up to the point where it all exploded. I mean, it was pretty explosive throughout, but that late goal really set everybody off and upset quite a few people. But the lineups as it was on the night: Lukic in goal, Sterland, Haddock, Fairclough and White, Batty, Strachan, McAllister, Speed. So your midfield four is reunited with Carl Schutt and Lee Chapman up front, Mike Whitlow and John Pearson on the bench.
I think part of the letdown of the game is that it feels a bit like having Schutt back and Batty back, like we've got a chance again. And Chapman's face is not exactly perfect, but he's looking slightly more human by the time this game comes around. He's had it restitched and he looks almost acceptable, doesn't he? He's not quite Frankenstein's monster as he was in the first leg. So also they've got Steve Bruce out, so it feels like there's an opportunity for him there. And it never really happens, does it?
For Manchester United, a bastard. Seeley in goal, Maldonaghy, Pallister, Irwin, Clayton Blackmore, Mike Phelan, Paul Ince, Brian McClair, Brian Robson, Lee Sharp, Mark Hughes with Danny Wallace and Lee Martin on the bench.
It's not even a good team, is it? There's some shit in there, let's be honest.
You did remind me, by calling them all bastards and then starting with Les Seeley, I think we touched on this topic before, that he's the one scum player who I kind of have some respect because he hated the rest of them as much as me. And there's a great reminder in this game of exactly why that was. He collides with Maldonaghy when they both go for a ball in the penalty area, and Maldonaghy ends up on the floor and has to have treatment to his back and is down for a good 2 or 3 minutes while they're treating him. And then when he gets up, he sort of turns to Seeley and says, God, did you have to whack me like that? And Seeley absolutely goes mad with him. Says, what the fuck were you running at me for? You should have been over there. I didn't know you were fucking... And it's great to see. He only came to Scum late in his career because he was on loan from Luton and Jim Leighton was terrible. And this, you know, everybody talks about Alex Ferguson being, you know, one of the all-time greats.
That's a Freudian slip, but it's very accurate.
Jim Leighton, who was his goalkeeper at Aberdeen when he was a success there and winning things in Europe, had a bad game in the FA Cup final against Crystal Palace, dropped for the replay for Les Seeley and not even spoke. They never spoke again. And Jim Leighton says he'll never speak to him again. And he had the same thing with Gordon Strachan, whether he was, you know, got him through all the good times and, you know, dropped him out of Old Trafford and sent him to Leeds. And Les Seeley came in then. And so he was kind of a very late import. And absolutely, he regarded Maldonaghy with the utter disdain that I think any right thinking person in football also would.
Well, having seen both legs of this, do you feel that the second leg was as breathless as that first leg at Old Trafford?
If by breathless you mean filthy, yes. I think Mark Hughes, as a bastard, comes into this one a little bit more, which is, he already set himself a high mark in the first game, but his insistence on kicking Chris Fairclough whenever possible really stands out in this one. And the fact the referee just essentially lets him get on with it feels a bit weak.
Do you think there's a bit of retribution for that knee to the head on Paul Ince in the first leg? Because that was really, really snide and I really enjoyed it.
That was just a little mistake. He was merely trying to walk in to defuse a situation with Chris Fairclough. And I mean, how could he know Paul Ince was sat on the floor? I mean, what was he doing there?
Was he to know that his knee would jolt in exactly that direction?
And it's not like Mark Hughes' retribution or if it was that was confined to Chris Fairclough, because at one point in this game, he kung fu kicks through the back of Chris White, which play on. I think there's a free kick given for it, but there's no booking. And then he gets into a bit of a scramble for the ball with Gordon Strachan, who, as he runs away with the ball, he just kicks him in the air. There's no justice here. There's no revenge. It's Mark Hughes is a prick.
This is the reason why I hated Mark Hughes. I think a lot of it goes onto this game.
And all he could do was volley. That was it. That was him. Just like 10 volleys a season. Everybody goes, oh, isn't he brilliant?
So what's the tactic in this game? We've sort of isolated it to almost one tactic, haven't we?
I mean, for either side, with Leeds, it was attack, 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 because we needed a goal.
Attack and shoot at Les Sealy every single time is unfortunately what our strategy is.
And Scum's one is just try to play the ball to Lee Sharp, get in 1v1 with Sterland and do what he did in the first leg, which doesn't work for them until the 96th minute at least, because for one thing, Chris Fairclough is onto it, and so he's always basically backing Sterland up and sometimes out sprinting him to get to Lee Sharp first. And the other reason is it does kind of cut off half the pitch. They keep referring on commentary to Mike Phelan being on the other wing, wondering if anybody's ever going to pass to him, but then kind of neglects the fact, one, they were just going down the left wing to Sharp, and two, Mike Phelan shit, so why would you give him the ball?
You're just here to make the numbers up, Mike.
Yeah, just stand there and look pretty. Well, just stand there.
There is a nice Lee Sharp moment where he goes past Batty, and I think it's Brian Moore commentating, isn't he? He says, oh, and Sharp's got the better of Batty there, and then Batty just absolutely twats him, and you're like, okay, they sort of got the better of him for 10 seconds or so, until Batty caught up with him again.
And just on the commentary, Jimmy Greaves is the co-commentator, and I quite enjoyed at one point they're discussing the state of the pitch, and he starts saying he knows a lot about the pitch at Elland Road. He says, I used to eat a lot of grass here. Norman Hunter would regularly put me down to have a close look at this pitch, so I know it very well.
There's an incredible save by John Lukic from Brian Robson at one point in this first half from that point-blank header.
I mean, that is a Lee Sharp cross as well, actually, so he must have got the better of us on occasion, but it is a brilliant save, this. And Robson even stands up and does an old-fashioned drat arm movement. He goes, ah, can't believe it.
And this is the Lukic who you only saw in his dotage. You don't remember him like this, do you?
No, he's good. He's good in this. That, I mean, it's an unbelievable save, is that? And it wouldn't have been against the run of play as such, because it just feels like we struggle to carve out good chances. We created a few half things, and on another night, one of them goes in, and Orsili lets one through his body or something, and we get something from it. It just felt like the better chances did fall to them, truth be told.
Probably our best one in the first half was Chapman just turned from the corner of the box and just shot a goal where nobody expected him to, and Seeley tipped that over, but we weren't putting him in the 6-yard box with the ball on his head like we wanted to.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Feta say in the second half they took a little bit more control of the game, do you feel?
They kind of slowed everything down and made it more a game on their terms than on ours. And it was repeated from the first half, but slower, I would say, less intense. And then it all changed with the injuries of what fucked us in this game. Frankly, you wouldn't say we were out of it at any point in the second half. But once Strachan and then Haddock went off in within minutes of each other, that was pretty much that.
Makes me sad when Strachan goes off, because he is our talisman. And if ever somebody was going to do something against a former club, you know, that sort of poetry angle of it, you'd hope it was him. So a massive loss.
It did feel like momentum was gone at that stage. And the Haddock one as well, I think, it was hard to watch in a different way, because it's one of those where there's not even a challenge on him. Given some of the tackles that have gone in across the two legs, when a player gets seriously injured, it's just from jumping and landing. And you see...
fell down the well.
You see Sutton giving it the no gesture, don't you? Just like a... no. He's done. He's done for a while, you would think, off that.
Although, this is an indication of how chaotic it became, because it took Sutton a while to get there. He was down in the dressing rooms dealing with Gordon Strachan, who was injured in a collision, should we call it, with Paul Ince. To be fair, it wasn't the worst tackle Ince has ever made, but they kind of clashed hips. And it's hard to know what's actually gone wrong with Gordon Strachan. But from then on, he can't stand up. He tries to play on for about 5 minutes. But then you see him just kind of falling to the floor and crawling, and he can't carry on really under those circumstances. So Mike Whitlow comes on, and we have a proper reshuffle. Mel Stirling goes right wing, Mike Whitlow goes left back, Peter Haddock goes over to right back, and that lasts for 2 minutes, because then immediately it's Ince again. Haddock goes up for an aerial challenge with him, and it's again not Ince's fault, but Haddock lands on, I assume it will be a rugby divot that his foot has been caught on, and his knee gives way from under him. But because Alan Sutton's off in the changing rooms with Strachan, it's the scum physio has to come running on and start treating him.
Sabotaged in Moscow.
And I don't know if that's... you could see Peter Haddock kind of making some gestures to him. I don't know if he was saying, "You get your dirty hands off me, you filthy old Trafford bastard, I want Sutty." Or if he was probably more saying, "My knee really hurts, please make it stop hurting."
You know, it's funny thinking about Strachan, you know, you have loads of different memories that kind of swirl around your head thinking about players, and one of mine is always Strachan hitting the first man at the near post for corners. Another one is sort of holding his hip or his lower back, walking around looking like he's in pain.
Well, he did that for years, didn't he? Pretending he was going to have to retire. And he never did. Just stuck around for another decade, it felt like.
But with only two subs, this kind of necessitated another shuffle of the pack, and not necessarily the prettiest shuffle of the pack, this one.
If only we had another Mike Whitlow on the bench, but there was only one, and that meant the other change. John Pearson had to come on for Haddock, so now Mel Stirling went straight back to right back, and Kyle Schutt sort of right wing, but there's only about 20 minutes left at this point, so it just becomes desperation. And with John Pearson and Lee Chapman up front with a combined height of about 20 feet, it's just long ball, and we just bang the ball long at them as hard as we can for as long as we can and as much as we can. And I did say that it kind of, that's the end of the game, but we have two decent shouts. Gary Pallister, who is underrated as a prick in this particular vintage scum team.
I thought you were going to say as a player, though. I thought you were going to give him some credit.
A great man.
People always give him credit as kind of like a stylish defender because he had quite nice hair.
And he was next to Steve Bruce as well.
Exactly. But he is jumping above Lee Chapman in the penalty area, and both hands on his shoulders as he goes up to make sure Chapman can't jump. And Chapman doesn't make something out of nothing in these situations. He's used to the rough and tumble of things in a penalty area, but on this occasion he's absolutely adamant that that should have been a penalty. Do we get it?
Of course we don't get it. It's a silly question you've asked there. Daft question.
And he gets man of the match, does Pallister, just to cap it all off.
Well, that was evening it up from the first leg, because Ian St John had given it to Chris White, and that had caused newspaper headlines because Alex Ferguson was whinging in the press and all sorts. So I think Jimmy Greaves is just, we'll give it to their... He wouldn't even have been their number six, was he? Because Scum's numbers are all over the place. Mal Donaghy's wearing two and playing centre-half. Right-back's wearing four.
Get it right. So that the other good chance that you referenced there, Moscow, speed, has a shot.
95th minute, I think.
And we're throwing everything at them at this point.
It would have gone off if that had gone in a slightly different way, probably. But wasn't to be. Mm. Across the two games, didn't create enough clear-cut chances, I think was the thing. We've shown that we can do it in other games, haven't we? But I think particularly with the reshuffle that was involved, it felt like that the chance was gone then when we're we lost Strachan, who's our best player, essentially, and then everyone moved around the pitch. And then this not going in at the last minute, it was just not to be, was it?
Yeah, and it wasn't just like sticking Stuart Dallas from right back to left back or something, was it? It was a complete wholesale change. But this was the thing that lit the blue touch paper and precipitated a lot of unhappy people being unhappy with one another. I mean, to be fair, some of the Man United fans were probably quite pleased.
It was a proper quick turnaround as well. Speed shot is from outside the area and it's deflected. And credit to Les Seeley for...
No.
Because he's diving, he's sort of going one way and he switches feet and he still keeps it out. And then because Leeds have got so many forwards, it's then Sharp miles offside. Anybody can see that the only way he can possibly be that far ahead of the play with the ball at his feet, he must be onside. And then he does his best to fuck it up, goes the wrong way around Lukic, gives himself a real tight angle, puts it into the top
That's
corner.
A good finish, isn't it, the bastard?
Well, it's the only finish he could do after putting himself in that stupid position. And then he goes and does his silly little dance in front of the scum fans. And you don't see enough of the mayhem, but Gary McAllister, again, we don't have the video footage to prove this, tries to kill the linesman, gets booked for it.
And you do see one bloke coming on from the southwest corner, don't you, somewhere?
I mean, to be fair, killing the referee or the linesman was only sort of a yellow card offence at that stage. It wasn't red card.
This was in it. The referee blows for full time straight after kickoff, and he is standing right next to the
tunnel.
Unfortunately, his mate, the linesman who had made this call, was on the far side of the pitch, so he had to get all the way through all the angry Leeds players. And where you do see the front of the West Stand in the southwest corner. Sorry, there's one person kind of determinedly on the pitch, but there's a lot of people just milling around on the touchlines looking for some trouble to get into, and it is all, it's absolute carnage. It would have been a better kind of mayhem had it been celebrating Speed's goal and that we're going to get extra time and some, you know, glory and still a chance of Wembley, but I think people still had a good time.
I mean, that reminds me what you're saying there about the ref leaving the liner on the far side to deal with it all and him just getting himself off there. It's like the old joke about being chased by the lion, isn't it, and the pack of escaping people. You don't need to be at the front of it, you just don't want to be at the back of it. And it all went off, and sadly the Wembley dream died, and there's nothing quite as disheartening as that moment when it happens, when it unfolds, where you're clinging on to a dream. There's always that little grain of hope, isn't there, as you're going in towards injury time, thinking we might just.
And Speed nearly did.
Yeah, and we came so close.
And if we'd had that penalty.
But to have that snatched away and the finality of them scoring and the scoreline being out of reach, the game's over, absolutely gutting.
Always next year, isn't there?
Well, Wilkinson was looking on the bright side. But I mean, this is as near to the bright side as he gets. Where it says, I was proud of the way we kept at it, and I will not be looking for the arsenic bottle.
Christ.
Cheers, Wilco.
Oh, Howard.
It would be a mistake if the gloom and despondency over this result overshadows the achievement of it all. And he's talking about the season as a whole here. There is a great deal of promise in what has taken place. And Strachan's quite a little bit more realistic, actually. Don Waters from the YEP asked him what he could learn from the game, and he said to stay away from Paul Ince. Ho, ho, ho. But then to say we are feeling down is the understatement of the year. I'm feeling very sorry for myself and my teammates, but after a couple of beers and a rest, I'll be over the disappointment.
It's all it took, isn't it? That is all it took. And Wembley is still not out of reach. I mean, we've now exited the FA Cup, we've now exited the League Cup on this disappointing day, but the Zenith Data Systems Cup, obviously it's the
one we all wanted.
It is. It's the trophy that everyone dreams of when they were a kid, the full members cup, to give it its old school name.
We all remember Billy Bremner carrying that round the pitch at Wembley.
Wembley, yes.
Yeah, Wembley.
And there are two plus points after this game because, one, the Rumblows Cup is not going to get anybody a place in Europe. So that's good if Alex Ferguson thought they were going to be sneaking back in.
Which lost on purpose, didn't we?
I was going to say, this is your classic, well, I was going to break up with you anyway.
And we can't leave without a nod. We've mentioned the television coverage. ITV sent Gary Newbon into the scum dressing room after the game to interview Les Seeley and Alex Ferguson. And their faces when he tells them it was a draw are absolutely exceptional. He's talking about, obviously, you didn't able to get the win out there today. It was a draw, but you've gone through anyway. And
Gary?
their faces. I mean, you've got Les Seeley, who has before the angriest goalkeeper in Britain, and Alex Ferguson, who does not need any excuse. He's on the... Ferguson, you can tell, he's on the verge of blowing up, and then just manages to remember it's live. But well done, Gary. I think that should happen more often. Just go in there, say, well, a little bit disappointing today that you didn't win that one. Oh, did you win? Well done.
Did you, though?
Well, we get that two-legged semi-final against Everton in the Zenith Data Systems Cup. The two legs of that scheduled for the 19th and 21st of March in a few weeks' time. But finally, it's back to the league. We haven't had a league fixture for a month when it comes round to the Southampton game, which is getting played on the 2nd of March down at the Dell.
Much happened in the league.
I don't even think it's still going, to be honest. I think they just suspended it when we played at Spurs away. So unbelievably, our last league fixture was when Chapman went down and did his face.
And what has happened in the league? I mean, things have happened. Kenny Dalglish has quit Liverpool. That's what's been going on while we've been concentrating on the Cups. In between Cup replays against Everton, decided he didn't fancy the replay and just quit. So things have been happening in football.
And we'll pick up with the league campaign as we try and cement our place in Europe when we do return to action against Southampton at the start of March. We'll speak to you then.
The Match Ball.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.